Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
This is Racing Across America. Thanks for joining us. I am Seth Merrow. Going to take a look at some Saturday action on today's show and talk a little three-year-old Derby trail as well. A little bit later on, we will be joined by Jeremy Plant, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown. We'll take a look at today's three-year-old stakes, a couple at Gulfstream. There's the Withers in New York, Bob Lewis tomorrow out in Southern California, and just get Jeremy's take on the three-year-old early portion of the Derby trail overall. But we're going to kick things off, really nice stakes action, again, with the two three-year-old stakes and more down at Gulfstream. So I reached out. You see her in the paddock every racing day down at Gulfstream, our friend Acacia Courtney. Acacia, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. Happy to have you on board to talk a little Gulfstream. And today, but before we get to today, I want to go back and get your thoughts on last week. I had your colleague Brian Etto on the handicapping show earlier, got his thoughts. I talked to Mike Welch last Sunday. I think everybody kind of agrees the World Cup itself was disappointing is the wrong word, but it's just not what we were kind of hoping for, that duel. But it was a fabulous performance from Life is Good. We're going to watch the stretch run here while we talk. And then earlier on the card, Colonel Liam was really good. Regal Glory overcomes a poor beginning and looked really good with that effort as well. So, again, didn't quite get the duel we were hoping for in the Pegasus World Cup itself, but overall, a really great day of racing. What was your takeaway?
Yeah, it really was. I agree. I think that we were all hoping you're going to see the two of them duke it down to the wire. But I think it really speaks to the quality of Life is Good, too, and take nothing away from Next Go. But, you know, that was actually my slight concern going into it. I think Next Go is the type of horse that is so deadly when he gets the lead. And I was worried that he would be outfooted, and he was. And you could see the intent from my Red Ortiz on Life is Good as soon as he came out of the gate. Life is Good actually hopped up a little bit. And I saw, I read, as I was watching from the winner's circle, you're right positioned in front of the gate. And I saw Red Ortiz look to his left. And there was no Next Go right there, you know, when he broke and he propelled forward. So it was a really incredible performance from Life is Good. It is tough and have these matchups so built up, but I think these kinds of matchups and potential rivalries are great for racing too. So I was really thankful to both of the connections that we got to see these two horses run in the Pegasus World Cup. We saw a tremendous performance from an incredibly talented horse.
Yeah, and you guys were talking about it in the lead-up the week before and that day, that the Pegasus so far, year in and year out, has been absolutely fascinating, and this year was no different. We were kind of waiting for that matchup, and as I say, from the Breeders' Cup on, we were kind of anticipating. It didn't play out that way, but still, Life is Good did not disappoint. Todd Pletcher, big day for him. And you mentioned Irad Ortiz. He was was in here doing the handicapping show, and so I was looking at other tracks, and I didn't have the sound on, but it seemed like he got a little emotional after the win on the turf.
Mm-hmm. He did. Well, he had been sidelined with an injury. He had a horse act up in the gate a couple weeks ago, and he hit his knee on the side of the gate, and he told me afterwards in the press conference after the Pegasus that he had a couple doctors tell him he wouldn't make it back in time, and he was worried that he would lose his mounts on both Life is Good and Colonel Liam, and Todd stuck with him, the owner stuck with him, and I think he was just so thankful, A, to be able to make it back to ride that day after being sidelined and having some people tell him that he wouldn't make it back, and then be getting to have those wins and keep those mounts on two really talented horses.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big day for him, as I say, a big day for Todd. And I mentioned earlier when I was talking to Brian as well, Jose Ortiz has made a little splash on his return to Florida this winter. He's up in New York today to ride in the Withers, but he has shifted his tack, and it seems like over the first week and a half, he has added his name to the Ortiz brothers that you have to watch down in Florida now. But let's jump in. Let's get some thoughts on this afternoon. We'll kind of work our way back from the Holy Bull. Holy Bull, Grade 3 event, $250,000 up for grabs. Some horses making potentially their first steps of the year on the Derby trail. I'm going to pull up and take a look at the Remsen. When this race was run, I said afterwards I was really impressed with both the winner and the second place finisher, Mo Donegal and Zandon. Mo Donegal in this afternoon for Todd Pletcher. But it's a fun race. Simplification for Antonio Sano as a player. Giant Game from our friends at West Point. And the interesting horse in here is Tis the Bomb, coming out of the third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, trying the dirt again this afternoon. Your thoughts on the Holy Bull?
Yeah, I think it's really intriguing, and you mentioned Simplification. I wonder if he's really quite as good as a couple of the other main players, but I think that he's the controlling speed, and that's really going to be the key, I think, for him. So it makes it a really fascinating race as far as tactics. It's too bad we didn't get to see Mo Donegal and Zandon go head-to-head again, as, of course, that was a little bit of a controversial Remsen with a little bit of a leaning in the stretch there and very tight down to the wire. But I actually did go with Giant Game. I was kind of enamored with him before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and I actually interviewed Dale Roman right before the race, despite the fact that the horse was 20-1, and he completely took my breath away in the paddock before the Breeders' Cup, and we'll see if he has to take a step forward today, but he's already shown he can go the distance. It's a first finish line race, and he was a little bit more tactical when he broke his maiden at Keeneland and spoke to Dale Romans yesterday, and he said he's not going to let Simplification get too far away. So I'd imagine we're going to see Luis Diaz, who knows this track and rides this track so well, get him into the game and not leave him with too much to do late with that first finish line run.
Yeah, it's certainly working well in the morning. I always like to root for our friends at West Point, so we'll see what that one can do. The 9 post position concerned me a little bit at the mile and a 16th, but I certainly think he is an absolute player in there. The Swedish Chant is the 10th race this afternoon at Gulfstream. 3-year-old fillies on the turf. I pulled up allowance optional claimer, Tampa, December 8th. The winner will be number 7, Battle Charge. Off of this effort, I'm tilting slightly in that direction. I think Ocean Safari is interesting. I think Opalina is a player, Nostalgic. Brian Addo on the earlier show thought Ambitus might be an interesting, little bit of a longer price in here. But what are your thoughts on the Swedish Chant?
Yeah, I did think Battle Charge was the one to beat, actually. I thought that was a really big performance on the turf at Tampa. I like her running style. We've seen Kim Ham. I think that this one may actually kind of fly beneath the radar a little bit because Kim Ham isn't a trainer you see much here at Gulfstream, but he's a terrific trainer. He's actually 21% on the year. You think of Jay out of the office a couple years ago, or last year, I should say, who was so successful as a 2- and 3-year-old filly. I actually put Ambitus second. I toyed with putting her on top. I think that she comes out of a super live race in her debut at Aqueduct on turf, and she won really gamely last time out. I wouldn't put too much stock into the figure that she got last time out. I've noticed that some of the buyer speed figures on the synthetic come back a little bit lower than we often expect them to. I thought she overcame some adversity that day. Love her getting back on the turf. I got to see her up at Palm Meadows the other day for Grand Motion. She looks terrific.
Yeah, interesting about the figures on the synthetic. We're all still trying to feel our way, so any help we can get on those synthetic and reading those is very helpful. 8th race this afternoon, going to be the Forward Gal Grade 3 event. 3-year-old fillies going 7 furlongs. For this one, I pulled up an Aqueduct allowance optional claimer. December 2nd, number 4, Radio Days will be the winner for Shug. And off of the first 2 starts, 2 wins, including this one we're looking at, I'm tilting in that direction. I'm just thinking the betting public keys on the buyers, and off these 2 wins and the 2 buyers this horse had fired, I think this horse will be a short price. Girl with a Dream, interesting. Diamond Wow. Gratitude from Todd Pletcher. Probably has to step it up a little bit, but if you're looking for maybe a value alternative, that may be the direction to go. What did you think in the Forward Gal?
I actually did land on Gratitude. I saw in a recent workout that you can watch on XBTV that she worked in company with a horse named Emmanuel, who I think is really talented. Just won a 2-turn allowance race at Tampa for Todd. We saw him break his maiden here at Gulfstream, and she was keeping up with him and was actually finishing a bit better. And I think that this is a filly who's just going to continue improving. I really liked what I saw from her last time. She was an expensive 2-year-old purchase for a daughter of Dialed In. Radio Days, I think, is the quote-unquote one to beat, given how impressive she was in her 2 races in New York. And I think it's interesting because she is like gun runner. There is quite a bit of turf pedigree on the bottom side with her being the half to Bowie's hero as well. And the fact that, yes, she won on the slot first time out, but then backed it up with that big win at Aqueduct last time out, I think was really, really a big move for her. This, I had a tough time because I think any of the four that you mentioned could take a step forward and win this race.
Interesting, the Gratitude working with Emmanuel, because you're right. We're going to watch that race a little bit later when we talk to Jeremy Plonk. But for folks who didn't catch it last Sunday, I had Todd on last week in anticipation of Pegasus Day. And I mentioned Emmanuel, and he said, yeah, we're looking at something, and kind of hinted at that race at Tampa, and so looked pretty good in the second career start. So, yeah, that's interesting that one was working with Emmanuel, who has certainly flashing some potential. Seventh race today, the Kitten's Joy Grade 3 event, $100,000, mile and a 16th on the grass. I'm going to look at a maiden special event from January 2nd down at Gulfstream. It will be the number two, Royal Spirit, getting it done. This just looks like maybe a breakout performance for this one to me. So I'm going to tilt slightly in that direction. Speaking Scout off a nice series of the last three races is interesting. Red Danger is in my mix. Grand Sonata, and a player as the other Todd for me. I guess on the price, Royal Spirit would be the other Todd. But what were your thoughts on the Kitten's Joy?
Well, I think that the two coming out of the pulpit are major players with Speaking Scout and Red Danger. I actually flip-flopped them here. I thought Speaking Scout was a bit unlucky with the post that day, and I had liked Red Danger going into the pulpit, but Speaking Scout gets the blinkers on. He showed a little bit of reluctancy to switch leads last time out. Thought he was really intriguing. And I think Coinage is intriguing because he'll be a pace presence. I think it speaks to the intent with Luis Diaz getting aboard. Yes, it was a really slow pace when he wired the with anticipation, but he ran okay in the Breeders' Cup with an outside post, and I think just in over his head a bit and being part of the pace. But I think they're going to be aggressive with him today coming back in his first start since that Breeders' Cup juvenile turf.
Very good. And we start out the stakes section in race number five in the Swale. I said earlier, always like to root for Lee Einsiedler. I was disappointed when High Oak had to sit on the sidelines with a little bit of a temperature, but we still wind up with a field of six in here. In Dreams to me is the interesting horse, but I pulled up the replay from My Prankster's win on December 10th. My Prankster will be the number five horse here. Todd Pletcher, trainee, also in on Saturday. Of a Revolution for Safi Joseph could be a player. Dean Delivers, interesting to me as well. Graphic Detail for Bill Mott. I could make a little case there, I suppose. But as I say, I'm tilting towards In Dreams. What are your thoughts on this whale?
I completely agree with you. I think that 91 buyer speed figure in the last two performances just kind of jump off the page, whereas the rest of the horses, I think, have ability, but likely need to take a little bit of a step forward. I thought that My Prankster's last two races were okay versus what we saw from his debut at Saratoga, when it looked like he just had a world of talent, and he is still talented for sure, but he just managed to win last time out, and I remember being a little underwhelmed by that performance. If you like Mo Donegal in the Holy Bull, an interesting note is that they've been workmates, My Prankster and Mo Donegal, and My Prankster able to keep up with him. So as far as workouts, if that's intriguing to you as well, I thought that was pretty interesting. But for me, it was all about In Dreams, as we saw Brad Cox come in with a nice winner on the Pegasus undercard last week as well.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning, that horse that had been racing up in Pennsylvania. I wasn't quite sure what to make of that horse, but just one time. Nice performance from that one for Brad Cox. Acacia, as always, appreciate the thoughts, and wish you and everybody down at Gulfstream good luck this afternoon. We will, of course, continue to watch and live vicariously as we look at the nice weather. I said to Brian earlier, as I drove in today, my dashboard thermometer was still reading single digits. So I always like to watch the racing at Gulfstream, and appreciate your coverage down there. And, of course, we will talk again.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Seth.
Appreciate it. Acacia Courtney, again, you can see her down in the paddock prior to the races, the pregame show as well on big racing days and every racing day during the championship meet down at Gulfstream. And today is one of those big days with, again, a really, really nice stakes-laden card. Let me just have time to hit on a little news, and I just wanted to pull up because got the Equibase stats for the month of January. And it's always interesting to take a look at how racing is doing as far as the numbers. And the January handle went down 1.82% as compared to 2021. It's interesting, though, because they also, as they have sent these out, Equibase sends these out every month and at the end of the year. It's interesting, they also make a 2019 comparison on all of these. Why do they do that? Well, 2019 was pre-pandemic. So the handle this year, January 2022 to January 2021, the national handle was down 1.82%. It was $942 million. But January 2022 to the last year before the pandemic, January 2019, handles up almost 20%. So I've said it the last 2 years. Horse racing, as compared to other sports, I think has done very well during the pandemic. And, of course, we were kind of the only game in town for, what was it, 2-3 months. We had those five tracks that kept running right in the initial stages of the lockdown period. And then television coverage kind of expanded out of that. And I think, as I say, we have managed to plow through the pandemic in not just as best a way as possible, but in a way that moved the game forward nicely. And as I say, compared to other sports, kind of stands out because it's nuts. January is compared to the January before the pandemic, a 20% increase. You'd also have to go back and look at January 2019 and see, were there cancellations there or that kind of thing may have played into it as well. One difference I can tell you, this year as compared to 2019, you had Oaklawn races in the mix. So that would make a little bit of a difference, too. That said, and I'm just looking, the number of races actually went down. The handle went up 20%, but the number of races overall went down 4%. So that seems to indicate things are pretty comparable as far as races and race dates and whatnot. But still, the handle taking a real jump as compared to pre-pandemic time. So as I say, the game has done a spectacular job during a rough time. So hats off to horse racing in general. Also, once again, want to remind you, let me just pull it up again. Yeah, it's a $98,000 double pick six carryover today at Aqueduct. It was a carryover from on Thursday when they started racing again. It was a carryover from last Friday. And again, last weekend, given the weather conditions, there was no racing in New York Saturday or Sunday. So the carryover from Friday carried to Thursday. And then Thursday, the last race was canceled, which, according to the rules, means the carryover had to go to Friday. Because, again, most of the card was run on Thursday. It was just the last race was canceled. But given that that situation happened after betting on the pick six and whatnot, New York State rules say the carryover had to go to Friday yesterday. And then yesterday was just a tough sequence and nobody hit it. So $98,000 carryover into today's card at Aqueduct. So keep that in mind if you're a pick six player. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, our friend Jeremy Plant, horseplayernow.com, countdown to the crown. Some three-year-old conversation. We'll look at today's stakes and the Bob Lewis tomorrow at Santa Anita and just general three-year-old conversation as well. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
is the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, we are joined now by our friend Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown. And it's that time of the year where we will plug Jeremy in on occasion as we march towards the Derby and talk Countdown to the Crown and three-year-olds. And with the three-year-old action today, a perfect kickoff to the season. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning. I guess first Saturday in February doesn't have the same ring as first Saturday of May, but we're three months away, and it's getting closer, Seth.
That's right. I'll get your opinion. Obviously, over the past Sunday morning, obviously the day after, and so far this morning, I've asked everybody your thoughts last week, Pegasus World Cup. I said I had Mike Welch on Sunday. I said the air went out of the balloon a little bit on the first turn because we all wanted, from the Breeders' Cup, we were waiting for that duel. We wanted them to face off all the way around the track. That didn't happen, but it was still a nice performance from Life is Good.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, we were looking for a heavyweight fight. Instead, you got kind of George Foreman holding that big arm out and, like, keeping him at bay the entire way. And Life is Good was just dominant. You know, I got to say, in the handicapping world, I completely missed the boat on that. Of having to take the either-or situation, you know, I kind of thought, go with the resume. He'd already been a mile and an eighth. He had already won over the track. Those kind of old-school handicapping factors leaned, for me, towards taking Nick's Go. But the brilliance of Life is Good showed out, and it was just a mismatch at this point in their careers. And for Nick's Go, it's off to the breeding shed. For Life is Good, hopefully it's off to a showdown with Flightline sometime this year. We can get excited about the matchup that never was. Maybe someday we will see it this year.
Yeah, you're right. Flightline has just been phenomenal so far, and Life is Good looked good the other day. And I'm with you on handicapping. Exactly the same thought. Life is Good. Proven already, and so I tilted in that direction myself, and so we were all disappointed by the time they hit the clubhouse turn. I was like,
yeah, it was over.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough at this point. Before we get started talking a little Countdown to the Crown and whatnot, give us a little update. Horseplayernow.com. What can people look for in the 2020 season? I had Jason Blewett on a couple weeks ago. I know he's doing some handicapping, so talk a little Horseplayer Now.
Yeah, we've got our Buzz Report, our daily handicapping report for each Saturday, which has some bonus Sunday coverage as well. This year, we added Jason Blewett, a former handicapper on the NIRA circuit that you guys are so familiar with and now working with West Point. He's going to take over our East Coast handicapping on Saturday, so Gulfstream this time of year, and then NIRA once we kind of break at Gulfstream after the Florida Derby. Terry Terrell has been a veteran for 45 years in Southern California as a public handicapper. He's back on our team. He was with us for about 8-10 years. We brought Terry back to handle Southern California this year, and then I'll be doing the Midwest, Oaklawn, Fairgrounds, Kentucky, those sort of tracks that I feel are my specialty. So I'm looking forward to that. This week, we didn't have much in the South, so I went to Tampa Bay Downs and did a little extra on their card because of the cancellation at Oaklawn. So Horse Player Now Buzz Report, you can get it each week, save money. You save about 50% by doing a subscription versus buying it each week. But, you know, product's been out for 12 years and reliable, and we hope that people enjoy it. It's not for, you know, like, hardcore, you're looking for all these figures and things. It's for handicapping help. And if you're the kind of handicapper out there who wants help with your, you know, handicapping each Saturday, those are the kind of players that we're going for. It's just $12. You get all three of our analysis for that.
And I will say, these days, for horse players, you're providing an important service, because when I first got into the game, particularly here in New York, in upstate New York, I could buy the two tabloids, the Daily News and the Post. But the upstate newspapers, everybody had at least one handicapper. You picked up the Post and the Daily News, you had 10 handicappers between. And there's just not that kind of information out there on a day-to-day basis anymore for horse players, but you're kind of filling a need in that direction.
Yeah, we try. Look, the subscription plan is less than $6 a week. It's $5.80 with the subscription for the whole season, every Saturday through the Breeders' Cup. So you get more than 40 weeks. And we created the product around the same time we created the Night School because people asked us, like, okay, well, give us your help on Saturday. And, of course, people might know the Night School program we did was kind of, you know, one of the key online launch programs for teaching people about horse racing. So we wanted to make a product that was affordable, that people at that level would be interested in. And that's what we continue with. But, you know, I feel like, you know, we're three high-level handicappers who do a good job for anybody at any level. But at the same time, you know, if you're a player who's kind of starter to intermediate, I think it can be a lot of help for you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's see if we can give some help to folks today with the three-year-old stakes races. We'll kick things off with the Withers in New York. Nice full field of 11 scheduled in here. I pulled up, and if people look at Countdown to the Crown, which, by the way, comes out every Friday, you handicap and preview three-year-old stakes and some of the allowance races and important three-year-old races coming up, review the previous week. It's a great product. We talk about it all the time. Free, you can just pull it up and check out your opinions on the three-year-old trail. I pulled it up and looked at some of the horses you liked, and so I'm going to pull up here. I'm right with you. December 18th, we're going to look at early voting winner, a maiden special weight event in the career debut for Chad and Klarovich. Jose Ortiz was on board this day. He comes back from Florida to jump on board this afternoon. And off of that effort, I'm with you. I put early voting on top. Constitutional Lawyer off the maiden breaker last time is interesting. I kind of switched up a little bit. Cavassier and Cook Creek, they ran 1 and 3 in the Jerome last time. But I thought Cook Creek may benefit from that and run better today. So I switched those around. But I'm with you with early voting. What are your thoughts on the Withers?
Well, you've got a lot of horses coming out of the Jerome Stakes, but that was so slow late. 27-4 for the fourth quarter. I've been doing Countdown to the Crown. This is the 17th year of doing it. I don't ever remember typing 27-4 for any quarter. I just don't. And it was a one-turn mile. So I know it's been very demanding in New York. That track has been heavy, outside horses. I get all that. But 27-4 is 27-4. It's the slowest fourth quarter I think I've ever seen for a race. So I can't play the horses out of the Jerome. I've got to take, as they go two turns now and they extend another eighth of a mile, I've got to try to find the fresh faces. And I thought early voting was the best of the fresh faces. He is pedigree-wise, route on route, right? He's gun runner on top. I believe he's got, Tis Now on the bottom as the dam sire. He is bred to go longer. So his mile race, I think, will translate out better to a mile and an eighth than many of the horses coming out of the Withers. That's why I lean to him. Chad's barn is heating up in the last couple of weeks compared to a pretty slow fall and early winter by his standards. But he's starting to perk up, and I think early voting is one that you look at Jose Ortiz, right? You're talking money riders here. He rode Cavassier to win the Jerome, and he's jumping off a graded stakes winner to ride a horse coming off a one-start maiden breaker. So I know it's Chad Brown. I see all those connections and things like that. It's better for business down the road. He'll ride more for Chad than he will for Kelly Breen. You always have to factor that in. But in a graded stakes with $250,000 on the line, and you think it could be a Derby horse, he was quick to jump off Cavassier and to take them out here on early voting. One other one I think you want to keep an eye on. I had this horse right at the bottom of my top 20 in Countdown to the Crown, 18, 19 in recent weeks. I had to kind of bump him this week to make room for some other horses who have had some good performances in recent weeks. But keep an eye on Gilded Age. This is a really well-bred horse. Medaglia d'Oro, the sire, Angela Renee, the dam. This is class on class, a really nice pedigree. And a horse who woke up last time at Churchill Downs. The further they go, the better probably for this one. And we know Bill Mott gets stamina out of his horses. I think Gilded Age with a good post. Remember, a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct. Short run into the first turn as they make a lap around the track there. That four hole's not going to hurt at all for Gilded Age. He doesn't have any speed. He's dropping towards the back anyway. But I think Gilded Age is a horse who can finish up here at a mile and an eighth and get a piece of it. And a horse to consider. But for me, in the Withers, it's about the fresh faces. I'm just not going to trust the Jerome back.
Yeah, Gilded Age, I looked at that and I debated, and I completely agree. 10-1 on the morning line, if that horse is flirting around there, maybe going up, because I always say that late fall meet at Churchill, I think is very salty for two-year-olds. You get a win there, I automatically like that. But then that Belmont goes to the sidelines, been working this horse down to Payson, and said, let's go up to New York and try the Withers. All of that is a nice scenario to me at maybe a little bit of value.
Yeah, I thought he was going to come back in an allowance race, you know, something like that, something conservative from Bill. But to get on the, you know, the van or the plane and come back to New York and to run this race, I think is a pretty significant point. One thing about Constitutional Lawyer, the one, I see a lot of people picking this horse on Twitter and public handicappers and stuff. I know the buyer figure was big last time, but the runner-up was a big favorite for Pletcher, who came back yesterday to run in the first race and lost at 2-5. Is that number inflated based on the runner-up last time, and that horse didn't come back to run well yesterday? He ran second, beaten 3 or 4 lengths. So I'm kind of a little bit worried about the company line with Constitutional Lawyer and think that figure might be a little bit inflated. We'll see. If he runs well, the figure's justified. If he doesn't, he looks more like those 60s that he had been running prior.
Yeah, that's a good note. All right, let's move our attention over to Gulfstream and take a look at their 2 3-year-old stakes. Let's start with the Holy Bull. Going to take a look here at the Mucho Macho Man. Number 3, Simplification, is going to take this. I'm tilting towards Mo Donegal, but I like Simplification. Mo Donegal impressed me in the Remsen. I like that and Zandon. So those two impressed me. Giant Game for West Point Thoroughbreds is interesting. The interesting horse in this race, and I'm not recommending him by any means, just interested to see what Tis the Bomb can do coming out of that third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. So getting back to dirt, I'll see what the McPeak runner can do in here. As I say, I'm not recommending it, but Simplification, we just saw that one come under the wire. Your thoughts in the Holy Bull?
This is one of those races where I write a 3-year-old scouting report, right? I'm trying to find Triple Crown trail horses, but I'm also a gambler, and I'm trying to cash a ticket on Saturday. I don't think Simplification is a Kentucky Derby type horse, but he looks like Lone Speed, stretching out around 2 turns for the first time. And the old saying is, the time you want to get them going 2 turns is the first time. They don't know any better, and they just run their race. And so Simplification for me is loose on the lead in here. I don't see anybody to run with them early. Javier Castellano, one of the better jocks in the last decade or two, nursing a horse on the front end. He's got a good clock in his head. He's got a great post position, post 4. Remember, these mile and 16th races at Gulfstream Park start right on top of the turn. Very much a bias towards the inside post. The outside posts have to run really well to overcome that. So I don't see speed to the inside in the 1-2-3. I think Simplification, bust, get the rail, go, and he'll take him as far as he can. And the mile and 16th races at Gulfstream, like this Holy Bull is, finish at the 16th pole finish line. So he doesn't have to have a ton of stamina. If he turns for home on top, he's only got to get to the 16th pole. So I think Simplification is the gamble in here. I think he's the right horse for today. I don't think he's the horse for down the line. I've actually got 3 top 20 horses right now in terms of prospects in my rankings. Tis the Bomb, Mo Donegal, and also Giant Game, who's unfortunately drawn that tough outside post 9 in here. And it's going to have to be much the best to win from out there. But I think all 3 of those are legitimate Kentucky Derby prospects. And they're not horses I picked to win this race because, to me, pace makes the race is always the first thing you have to look at. Lone speed is the most dangerous thing in all of horse racing. And when you see a quality horse who has a win over the track, I know it was only a mile, he's running a home game, he's got a great post position, he's lone speed. To me, that's the gamble. And I don't think Simplification is going to get bet. I think those other name horses are going to get bet more. I think you could be seeing 6-1 perhaps on Simplification. And if you give me that on lone speed, I'll take it and I'll take my chances. If he gets run down, so be it. If you can take them wire to wire, that $14 mutual will look pretty good.
Yeah, speed at Gulfstream, first finish line. You're right. And I'm looking at your top 20 here, and you mentioned it. Tis the Bomb, as I say, that to me is the interesting horse. You have that one at number 5 on your top 20 list. So what are you expecting from that horse today on the switch back to the dirt?
I think he's going to run a damn good second. You know, I mean, if I'm right, he runs a good second, then he can't catch Simplification because of the pace dynamics. I'll be hitting that exacta several times, you know, and that's kind of the way I see the race. I'll go too deep in the multi-race wagers. Tis the Bomb has been working in the morning with Smile Happy, Kenny McPeak's really good Kentucky Jockey Club winner. He has outworked him and made him look not average, but he has made him look significantly less than him every time I've seen him together on video. Tis the Bomb is doing very, very well right now. I know he's by Hit It a Bomb, who won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. There's the turf on the top, the pedigree, but he's out of a Tis Now mare. He debuted on the main track. going five. That wasn't the deal. But at Ellis Park, he won by 14 on an off-the-turfer. Those races are usually inflated because many of the horses don't want to run on the dirt. So the margin doesn't jump off the page at me that he won by 14 because of the situation. But the fact that he was able to win going a mile on the dirt tells me he's okay. The key with any of these horses going turf to dirt for me is always the dirt in the face factor. So how far behind are they? Do they get cover? Do they stay to the outside and avoid that cover? You don't want to be covered up if you've got a turf horse running on the dirt. He's going to take dirt the whole time, and it could dissuade him from running his race. But I do think 'tis the bomb as they get longer, as they go farther. I think he's going to be an effective dirt horse in this crop. So, yeah, I think he's got a big chance to win. And, again, for multi-race wagers, I would go too deep. I would take the speed simplification and 'tis the bomb as the highest quality horse from off the pace. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think the trip for him is to stay outside of horses. If he stays out in, like, the three path and in the clear and doesn't take dirt in his face, he's going to run his race.
Yeah, he, to me, is the interesting horse in here. I'm going to be very intrigued to see what 'tis the bomb does. A little bit earlier on the card, the Swale, three-year-old's going seven. It's the time of year where if you have a three-year-old and they're a sprint mint, you can try the sprint, and then if they win, you start thinking, let's maybe stretch and try two turns and see what we have. That may be the scenario for some of these in here. I pulled up the Oaklawn allowance optional claimer from the middle of December. Who thought we would be saying that? The Oaklawn race from the middle of December. But it is number four in the dream, in dreams, getting it done. I'm going to tilt in that direction for Brad Cox, but my prankster for Todd Pletcher coming out of a win down at Gulfstream is clearly going to be playable as well. What are your thoughts on the Swale?
Yeah, it looks like an either or, right? I mean, if it gets beyond In Dreams or My Prankster, I think it'll be a significant surprise to everybody. In Dreams' win was really good. The horse who runs second here, you don't see him on the screen because he's six lengths behind. His name is Chasing Time. There he is crossing the wire for Steve Asmussen. He came back and ran probably the most impressive three-year-old race I've seen this year since the turn of the calendar, Chasing Time's next allowance race at Oaklawn. And he got dusted by this horse in December. So that is good company lines and a good barometer for In Dreams. You have to like that. He gets Irad Ortiz on the ship in. A lot to like there. In Dreams is going to be tough. My Prankster, I also think, is highly talented. He's a horse who at Saratoga last summer looked so good training before his debut. He was bet off the board. He ran off the screen, winning by 10. I think he's getting back to some of that form with that last allowance win. I know the win margin doesn't look like a whole lot, but there were 13 lengths back to the third horse, I believe, in that race, the 12 or 13. So they spread eagled the field. The runner-up just happened to run a good race as well. I've probably got My Prankster overrated in terms of a Derby prospect. I've got him in at number eight. I've probably overinflated the Pletcher horses because I just haven't found enough groove with other horses that I like yet. And there haven't been a lot of dazzling performances. Chasing Time, I talked about his race at Oaklawn. There's a horse named Apprehend who's also run a really nice race, but I think that was right before the new year turn. There haven't been a lot of dazzling performances so far since 2022 has begun. So My Prankster's up there. I've got him like at the eighth-ranked prospect, but maybe he's a sprinter moving forward. There's enough pedigree, though. My Wandy's Girl is damn. You know, it's a really effective filly and mare. Won a lot of good stakes races at middle distances. He's by Into Mischief, who's gotten a Derby winner already. And authentic. So, you know, maybe My Prankster can go longer, but Todd's not in a hurry to do it now. He's got Mo Donegal to run in the long race, so he can go short with My Prankster and maybe sweep the three-year-old stakes. But I would assume if My Prankster wins this race, he gets a chance somewhere to go long next time.
Yeah, and you mentioned In Dreams and the company line. In Dreams beats Chasing Time by six lengths, and I pulled up the chart from the next race for Chasing Time. As you mentioned, Chasing Time, middle of January, wins by almost eight lengths at 1-2 in a nice field of about nine down there. So that was certainly flattered In Dreams. All right, and finally, on the weekend three-year-old action, tomorrow out in Southern California, the Bob Lewis. It is a field of five. Bob Baffert has a couple in the field, including Messier. We're going to look at the Los Alamitos Futurity. Slow Down Andy will be the winner for Doug O'Neill, but running second will be Messier, the number three horse. You're looking for a little rebound in the Bob Lewis as I read your analysis on Countdown to the Crown, and it looked like you kind of based this on looking at some of the workouts.
Yeah, Messier is working really well. You can see those workouts at XBTV. Great job by the crew there on the ground in Southern California and in Florida. They've banked, I think it's somewhere over 15,000 works over the past couple years, and a really valuable handicapping tool to use, XBTV.com. It's free. All you have to do is log in and create an account, but there's no tie to a wager or anything like that to it. It's free to use. Messier is working really well for Baffert. You know, I thought Slow Down Andy was going to be in this race. He's conspicuous by his absence. He beat him in that race at Los Alamitos in the Futurity. He's not there for Doug O'Neill, so I'm kind of curious where he may end up and if there's something amiss there. But he has been on the work tab, so maybe they just decided to wait for another race and hit the road with Slow Down Andy. There's not a lot of options to me in this Bob Lewis Stakes that jump off, you know. Sir London was good last time at Los Al. Those horses often don't repeat that Los Alamitos form. And like we talked about, off the turf races have exaggerated margins sometimes. These Thurman races at Los Al have exaggerated margins too. That stretch run is like the length of an airport runway. I mean, it is so long. And so like the margins, like I'm ahead two, I'm ahead four, I'm ahead six, I'm ahead 10 before you know it. It seems like a lot. So Sir London's last win might have been kind of inflated in that respect. But, you know, so I don't have anybody else I like in the race. Wharton looks okay for Baffert off the career debut win. Happy Jack is kind of the plan B for Doug O'Neill. He didn't run Slow Down Andy. He runs his last out maiden breaker, who was just, to me, okay in his debut win. If Messier doesn't win this one, then, he's not a trail horse, you know. I mean, I think this race sets up for him. He should win. Flavian Pratt jumps off the ride for Simon Callahan, but was that a move or did just Baffert guarantee Johnny Velasquez the A mount and the horse he wanted to pick if he came out all season? I kind of lean towards that. And the fact that Johnny V's on Messier, I don't look at it as Pratt opted the ride to Sir London. I think that was probably Johnny V's call, and he'll be aboard Messier. So whether these horses get to the Kentucky Derby or not, the courts will decide.
Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned Messier maybe a trail horse. And is he a trail horse? It's just...
Santa Anita Derby you had, trail, I guess.
Yeah. Santa Anita and the same Arkansas Derby, because I noticed you wrote some nice things about Newgrange last week at Oaklawn. But, boy, this Bob Baffert saga going to the Kentucky Derby and in New York, and they still haven't adjudicated things. And that's the one that gets me. The Kentucky Derby is, to me, the linchpin of all of this, and that has dragged out so long. It's just going to make this Derby trail really kind of confusing, to say the least.
But the legal system is the toughest battle that we have to face when it comes to handing out punishments. And for years, that's why when you read the rulings, you saw $500 fine and 3-day suspension. And the guy took the 3-day suspension during dark days when he was going to Cabo anyway, right? You have to give a punishment that they'll agree to so that it doesn't go to litigation. Yeah. Because if it goes to litigation, it just doesn't hold up often. And it's very expensive to litigate. So what racing commission, what racing body is going to pay to litigate against everyone? It's expensive to defend yourself, but it's more expensive to prosecute everyone, right? And so where that money comes from, God knows they'll want to try to take it from the bettors, and we don't want that to happen, increase takeout and things like that. So it's the legal system is a very prickly pear, if you will, in how we move forward in adjudicating some of these things. And quite frankly, I don't think they know what to do with the Derby yet because they've had this long to do it. I know there is some hearing, I believe, coming up sometime very soon, if it did not take place in the last few days. So we shall see. My gut tells me you'll end up seeing Baffert on some sort of injunction with his horses in the Derby because they won't have made a decision by then.
Yeah, the whole thing, just from a fan perspective, a little bit disappointing, a lot disappointing. Yeah. But before we let you go, let's get back to the happier conversation and talk a little smile happy, because let's just talk an overall picture. Again, if people go to Countdown to the Crown, they can look at your current top 20 contenders for the Derby, and number one is Smile Happy. I pulled up the Kentucky Jockey Club from November 27th. Smile Happy is going to be the number 8 horse here. One of a number of Ken McPeak live 3-year-olds this year, potentially headed to the Derby, but certainly Smile Happy with a win over the Churchill Strip in one of these late fall 2-year-old races, 2-year-old stakes races even, that I think are very salty and produce nice runners. So talk a little bit about Smile Happy at the number 1 position for you.
Well, this was a cementing kind of victory to what his debut was, because his debut at Keeneland, I mean, that you know and the fans know that I follow very closely, he broke his maiden at Keeneland going around two turns as a first-time starter. That hadn't happened. I mean, that just doesn't happen at Keeneland. It was a historic win in that respect. He went fast that day. He looked fabulous. To me, it was the most impressive two-year-old performance I have seen at Keeneland, and I've been working for Keeneland since, I believe, 2007 was my first year doing stuff with every day, every race with Keeneland. So you take a look at the last 13 years, no two-year-old has ever looked better at Keeneland to me than what he did in his debut. So then when he came back and ran that race that the fans just saw in the Kentucky Jockey Club, another route race, but stepping up in the Grade 2 Stakes Company against seasoned horses and beat him almost as easily as he won his debut, he really impressed me. Now, I will say, we mentioned it earlier, that his stablemate, Tis the Bomb, has been working with him head-to-head, you know, team drills, as a lot of these good stables do with their horses, and he has not looked as good as his stablemate in the morning. He did not work last week, which I thought was a little bit odd, but he was back on the workout tab this morning. So Kenny McPeak posting video on his Twitter feed if you want to see it. He did work in company this morning. So he missed the work last Saturday, which to me is a little bit curious and something that you have to keep an eye on. But the Risen Star is still a couple weeks away at Fairgrounds. That's where they're planning to run him back. Churchill's got the long stretch run, and he ran well there. Fairgrounds has an even longer stretch run. And so I think Kenny's trying to match his four contenders up over four different circuits, and he's doing a nice job. You know, he wants to bring Rock and Roll back at Tampa. He's got the horse today at Gulfstream Park, of course, and Tis the Bomb. He's got Smile Happy to go to Fairgrounds. And then, of course, he's got the horse at Oaklawn that's already run in two of the stakes races. So Kenny's got a lot of options. He's doing a really good job of keeping them spread apart. And I'll give him credit. You know, he's a bit of a salesman and things like that and an entrepreneur. But he's doing good PR right now in that he's keeping the fans apprised of what's going on with his horses, where they're headed next. He's not being coy about it. He's posting their workout videos and stuff like that on his social media feed. So I tip the cap. The guy's got a big hand to play. Best crop for Kenny McPeak for sure for the Triple Crown since back in 2002 when he had Harlan's Holiday and Repent back in those days. He had a really big hand to play back in 2002. I was along for the ride to see some of those prep races. I remember being in New Orleans for the Louisiana Derby when Repent won and Harlan's Holiday down in Florida and up at Keeneland then for Harlan's Holiday, I believe, too. So Kenny's got a good group here 20 years later. He's never won the Derby. He's a Kentuckian. He's won the Belmont. He would certainly like to win a Kentucky Derby, I am sure, to cap his career.
Yeah, he's always been very accommodating to us, so easy to root for. And I've been saying it now for 2 months at least. He really rebounded after a tough Saratoga this year. We talked to him up in Saratoga, and he had those horses in quarantine, and it was just a tough situation getting training time and whatnot. But then once he got away from Saratoga and back down to Kentucky for the fall, things rebounded very nicely for Ken McPeak. Let me touch on another one. And if the guys in the control room, I didn't ask for the replay, but maybe they can pull it up. The ninth race yesterday at Gulfstream. So if you guys can grab the stretch run to that, the ninth at Gulfstream yesterday, because you have American Icon sitting number two on your list.
Yay.
And yesterday, yeah, I'm going to ask you because he ran second yesterday at 4-5. And I'm just curious because Countdown to the Crown comes out in the morning. This race was in the afternoon. So I'm curious what your takeaway was for American Icon after yesterday's second place finish.
Well, fortunately, this was week 5 of season 17 at Countdown to the Crown, because week 6, he will not be number 2. You know, I mean, we're projecting off of a really, really nice debut win. And I thought he would romp in this allowance race. It was very Todd Pletcher-like to go in a one-turn-mile allowance race coming off of a debut win like that. He had an easy go of it early, and then he just didn't have it. Yeah. You know, I mean, he just got outrun in due time. He's going to sweep up 3 wide for Kelly Breen and just go by him like he's tied to the post. It was nice that he outkicked Safi.
Yeah, I will say he fought back nicely for second. I will give him that credit.
Yeah, he didn't throw out the anchor, but the other horse looked like he should have looked in terms of the way he's finishing up and reaching out.
Yeah.
And it was a decent effort, but it's not a number. And he could still be a stakes horse, and he could still be a Kentucky Derby horse. Don't get me wrong. He's not number 2 6 weeks into the season, though, anymore. Some of this is, you know, we talked about this with the Life is Good debate versus Nick's Go, right? Some of it's resume. Some of it's your eye test, right? And Life is Good didn't have the resume that Nick Stowe had, nowhere close to it, but he had the eye test. Well, you go with the eye test with a horse like American Icon, he doesn't have the resume of a lot of the horses in the top 20, but I thought on eye test on his first race that he looked like he could be a potential star. Pletcher's winning everything in sight. We missed the boat on this one. I don't think he's number two. Could he get back into the mix in two more races? Sure. You know, it's early enough. We're 3 months out, so he could get two races in him. He certainly is not going to get another allowance race to fill later in the Gulfstream meet. That's kind of like a once or twice a meet thing. Yeah. So he goes to the stakes races next. Could he go to the Tampa Bay Derby at a mile and a 16th and then move on to the Bluegrass at Keeneland? A lot of the Tampa horses go to Keeneland. The spacing works out really good. Todd supports both races. Yes, so I think you could obviously see American Icon as a potential Tampa Bay Derby horse out of this race. And if he runs well there around two turns, and he runs well at Keeneland, maybe he justifies it in winning the Bluegrass that he is a top five type horse. But I can't keep him there now.
Yeah, I wanted your opinion on that. As they say, you put the
And thanks for throwing that in. You didn't tell me. All these papers I got here, you didn't tell me anything about the horse that I had picked number two. Getting beat that you were going to bring out to me.
Well,
I still love you.
Those are interesting. I can't knock you. I mean, he was coming off a debut win, and it was a Pletcher horse down at Gulfstream. But I'll go in the other direction here, because before we let you go, I wanted to comment on Emmanuel. You have him at number five, and I wanted to get a chance for folks to watch the race from last Sunday, because we haven't shown that replay yet, as it was a Sunday race. I had Pletcher on last week, and we had taped it. I had him on last Saturday morning, but we had taped it earlier in the week, and he hadn't yet found the spot for Emmanuel, but he was kind of hinting that this may be the kind of a situation, an allowance event like this. We'll watch the stretch run. Last Sunday at Tampa, Emmanuel's going to be the number four horse. As they say, you have him number five on your list. What was your takeaway from this start from Emmanuel?
Oh, this is good. This is what you wanted to see here. This is him finishing up on the back end like we saw Kelly Breen's horse in due time do in the video, right, from Gulfstream yesterday. So this is what you wanted to see. This is how you wanted to see American Icon finish. He didn't. Emmanuel did. Emmanuel's a horse I really like off his first win. I had him somewhere in the 14-15 range, I believe, until this race at Tampa last Sunday. Then I zoomed him up the list. I really liked the way he moved forward. That's what you're looking to see, you know, strong debut, even better second start. Can't wait to see what he does next. You know, he's got the race over the track at Tampa. Could he go back to the Tampa Bay Derby? Todd, like Kenny McPeak, we said a few minutes ago, he's got to decide where he's going to spread some of these horses out. Todd doesn't have a stable at Oaklawn, but he supports that program a lot in the stakes, especially later in the meet. So this could be a horse for the Rebel. You could see Emmanuel in something like the Rebel. Maybe you see American Icon go for the Rebel. Those two horses, they're not both going to go to Tampa. They're too good. There's not enough points at Tampa. It's not enough purse at Tampa to be splitting your atoms, I don't think. I think when you have two good horses and you need to get them points and you want to get purse money and graded black type out of them, I don't think you run two really good horses against each other in the Tampa Bay Derby. You separate. So I could see American Icon or Emmanuel going to Tampa, the other one going to the Rebel. That would seem to make a lot of sense. And, of course, Todd's got a lot of hands that he can still play at Gulfstream and at Fairgrounds.
Yeah, that was a nice performance, certainly from Emmanuel. And as I say, you have him sitting at number five on the list. And as you mentioned, a number of the runners today are in your top 22. So we'll see how they fare this afternoon. Again, Countdown to the Crown. You can type that into Google. HorsePlayerNow.com will take you to Countdown to the Crown as well. Always a nice package that comes out on Fridays. Highly recommended during the Derby Trail season. And as noted earlier, Jeremy, we appreciate the conversation to kind of kick off a little Derby Trail talk, and we will check in again as the Derby Trail progresses.
I would like that very much, Seth. Good luck to you, and good luck to all the players out there.
Appreciate it. Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, and of course, Countdown to the Crown. And again, that package comes out every Friday. Nice preview of the stakes action, and early on the Derby Trail, Jeremy also will take a look at some of the important allowance, maybe even some of the important maiden special races as well. And in preview and review also, every Friday morning, you can check that out, Countdown to the Crown. All right, that gets you caught up with nice stakes action today at Gulfstream, three-year-old action in New York in Gulfstream, tomorrow out in Southern California, the Bob Lewis. So hopefully we've given some ideas out that will allow us to put a little dough in our pocket this afternoon and tomorrow as well. We'll be back, speaking of that, in probably about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon. I'm zipping through the weekend already. But as I say, we'll take you through the afternoon today. A little Tampa, a little Gulfstream, some Aqueduct. Don't forget, there's a pick six carryover, $98,000 at Aqueduct. If you're looking for Oaklawn, I'm an Oaklawn fan. If you haven't heard, Oaklawn, Thursday they knew with anticipation for some inclement weather down there. And I think ice was more the concern down at Oaklawn. They canceled for the weekend a couple of days ago. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off at Oaklawn. So again, no Oaklawn this afternoon. But again, we'll take a look at the two Florida tracks and Aqueduct for this afternoon on OTB Live. But there will be plenty of other action as well. It should be fun. Thanks to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB during the championship meet. We appreciate their support. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. As noted, be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.